What's up, everybody? This is Preston Johnson. Welcome to A Petty Moose, episode 7 or 8. I do not remember which one it is. This is brought to you by Fantasy Guru Elite. I am at Sports Cheetah on Twitter, and I am with at Lindatrain from Twitter. Matt Lindemann works for Caesars. We're doing this Thursday night. Apologize for the delay. We had a little double booking here at the studio Tuesday night that we didn't know about until the minute of, essentially. But we're going to get some questions in. We have a few that probably are a little outdated, but a few that we can still discuss, and then also all of the games that are coming up this weekend. But first and foremost, Matt, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Cheetah. It's great to be back. You know, kind of keep mixing it up on everybody with all these different days, but what can you do?
That's true. Was it Monday originally?
Monday. I think we've done every day of the
Tuesday.
Week.
I
now,
think
maybe.
We did a Wednesday once. Because we had to. We'll soon we'll just do these live on Saturdays all day long during the games. Actually, you'd probably have to be in the background.
Not going to happen, but be nice.
So the first thing we want to discuss, and again, call in if you guys have any questions about games. We have 6 or 7 Twitter questions that are pretty good that I wrote in that we'll get to. But the whole Five Dimes and Tony incident, I've had, I think, more questions about that in the last few days. And it's relevant. I think it's important to discuss, not necessarily trying to guess what's actually happening or anything, but a lot of people have been wondering what they should do with their money. I personally told everyone, you know, the first time we read that initial report that went public, that you should try to take your money out. I haven't used Five Dimes in outside of a couple futures where they just have like really long odds versus everywhere else. But I haven't like regularly used them. So I wasn't sweating it too much, but a lot of other people are and have been. I said, try to take your money out if you can. I'm not sure if the Astros just hit a homer to tie the game. Nope. Warning track. Some people in here need Astros. Some people don't need the Astros.
Yeah.
Jared might want the Astros. It's all right. It's David Price. He's due, right? He's due to blow this game. So I'm not sure what the actual progression has been in the last 2 days for people that have tried to take their money out. But it doesn't hurt to try, depending on how much you have there, you know, how much is at stake as far as your bankroll goes or just your livelihood. But the whole situation's pretty weird. The update, I guess, more recently is that they tried to send a $750,000 cryptocurrency kind of hostage situation, like let them go, and they sent the money, and they still haven't heard anything now, whatever it is, 20 or 21 days later. So hope all is all is well. Tony, he's done some people wrong, but he's a human being, so I hope it gets settled and that he's okay and whatnot. But those are my thoughts. I don't know if you have anything you wanted to add or thoughts on the whole situation yourself.
Yeah, you know, I've had a lot of people ask me too, and I think the way you have to look at it, really, I mean, if you had a bank that you knew was uninsured, that didn't have any type of regulation, and there's no guarantee you're going to get your money, and then you found out that bank employees were being held hostage or kidnapped, and the company was potentially using company money to pay it off ransom, and then apparently this ransom grab was effective because we still haven't heard from this guy. And so, I don't know. I would be scared. You know, I like to think I'm not one that overreacts or panics, but I would take my money off. I don't see the point with, you know, so many other options of leaving your money on there and taking the chance of something happening. And, you know, you said you don't really know what's happened the last couple of days. They have been paying people out, which, you know, you can interpret as, you know, everything's going okay, or you could take it as they're realizing that people are panicking and they want to put a stop to it by paying out some of their better customers, making sure that everyone feels okay.
Sure.
But you really just don't know. You don't know what's going to happen. This news is getting around. You got a lot of customers that are probably freaking out, taking their money. You don't really know what their financial situation is. So I just don't think there's any reason to really risk it. I would probably, at the very least, I would only leave in what you're comfortable losing if they happen to shut down tomorrow. But I think I'd probably make an effort to go ahead and take my money off too.
Yep. No, I agree. We have a caller on the line, and then we can a couple more thoughts on that story, or maybe this is about it. But Dan is on the line. How you doing tonight?
What's going on, guys? It's actually not about that.
That's totally cool. What's up?
I got a question on this Buffalo-Toledo game, and I'm sorry I didn't hear the beginning part of that. So if you got in the middle of something in depth there about a sports book, I didn't really catch that. But sorry to kind of like interrupt it with a football game. But this Buffalo-Toledo game, so I have it around 5. And someone else I talked to said they had it around 5-2. I bet Toledo -1. It seems to be going the other way now. Even though I know that Buffalo this year is just like one of those teams that seems to be catching steam no matter what every single week. They're like the UCF of last year. And even this year, UCF is still that team. For some reason, I knew, you know, Buffalo gets that steam every single week, yet I still didn't wait on it. And now it's going the other way. So I just wanted to kind of hear your thoughts on that, where you guys have this game rated, and if you think, you know, Toledo's the right side.
Yeah, no, thanks for the call. And you can stick around on the line for a little bit if you need to. For the people that are on the stream, we're trying to run because we have had a couple, not complaints, what's the word, suggestions to have the callers actually audible. So we're using these speakers up here on top that maybe are even visible in the stream. But if you couldn't hear that very well, he's just questioning, not question, I always say that. He has a question about Toledo Buffalo. And his number was closer to 5. I believe mine's just 2.5. So I probably wouldn't be betting anything unless it got like drastically the other way where Buffalo is a big favorite. But I will say, yeah, but there are those teams. It seems like every year there'll be one or two that just get steamed every week. And I don't really blame someone that was like ahead of that, right? If you were betting Buffalo every week and covering every week, why would you really stop in week 7, right? So I think there is something to that. I don't think it's necessarily a spot I want to try to jump in and guess when they're not going to cover. So if your number is 5 and you're pretty confident in that, then obviously you're supposed to be betting -1 pick, +1, whatever you can find in that range. My number's just a little bit lower. I'm not actually sure off the top of my head where your number's at, Matt, but if you had any thoughts
there. Yeah, I'm going to look. Yeah, I actually took a chance this week. I didn't prep for any of these MAC Sunbelt Conference USA games, hoping nobody would ask. So, of course, the first question.
First one.
Toledo, I think we've talked about them before, just really not impressive this year. They definitely look a little bit down, but I do think one thing worth noting is that their quarterback's been banged up. Came back last week, played, wasn't really that great, but he could be, maybe a little bit healthier. And then, you know, it's really just one of those spots where you look at the game and you say, you know, what was Toledo preseason? I mean, you know, Buffalo's gone so far up, and then, you know, Toledo's dropped a decent amount that, you know, this number was probably 7-10 preseason, I'd say. So it's kind of tough for me, you know, just from that perspective, betting Buffalo. It kind of feels like you're, you know, buying high and selling low on Toledo. So I don't know if I could do it, but here, let me see what my number is.
I was just going to add, too, real quick. They've had a few misleading final scores. Like the Eastern Michigan game last week, I believe, was 28-3, and then Toledo scored the last few times late and actually only lost 28-26. And then even against Bowling Green, I think Bowling Green was winning the game in the third quarter. They ended up beating Bowling Green by 16, but Bowling Green's really bad, and they struggled pulling away from them. Fresno State was 49-27 final, but I believe it was 49-13 or 10 at one point. So Fresno State had that game way in check. And then even like they gave up 44 to Nevada. I know Nevada's got an okay offense. There's over 100 points in that game. I'm not sure really if Toledo's as good as we anticipated. And then it's kind of compounded with the fact that Buffalo's been pretty solid.
Yeah, it looks like I got Buffalo, or actually I have Toledo a small favorite, but S&P's got Buffalo like -9. So
yeah,
it's kind of interesting. But
nice. Hey, thanks, Dan, for calling in. We appreciate it. Jim on the line, I think. Jim, are you up next? We'll see if the producer's got you. Hey, what's up, Jim? How you doing?
Good, how are you? So, kind of commenting on the whole Tony situation from Five Dimes. You say to take your money out. What do you suggest? What books do you guys suggest going to online that are good for payouts and also lines?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. Those are going to be my actual suggestions right after Matt had wrapped up and then we took Dan's call. But I was going to say, I really don't think there's a point, even if you have some money offshore, in leaving it at Five Dimes, just because there are a bunch of other options. People ask, you know, occasionally what books I recommend. And so if you're inside the United States, which I imagine a lot of the people listening or calling are, I always give the answer that it depends on what you're looking for. If you're someone that is just betting pretty small for fun, you can get reduced juice at Five Dimes, right? That was kind of nice. You can get better futures prices usually at Five Dimes. But if you're looking to like hit openers and you're pretty confident in what you're doing, then Chris and BetOnline or Bookmaker and BetOnline are two really good options because BetOnline will be up first on Sundays, for example, for college football sides, and Bookmaker will put up totals on Monday first. And so there's, I guess, a race to, you know, getting better numbers and this and that. And so those are two pretty reputable books, especially Chris, which is more, and Bookmaker is a sister site. They're, you know, they're international. So I would say those two are two that I would I'm not getting paid to say that or anything, just to make that clear. I just think those are two that I've used. And I think if you're more serious about what you're betting and how you're approaching it, those are fine options. If you're looking for something different where you're just betting smaller and you want better, you know, teaser odds, or you want better, futures bets, I'm not getting paid for any of this. I think one that is similar to sort of to Five Dimes in that regard would be sportsbook.ag, which I've never actually bet on regularly at all, so I couldn't really say much more than I know that their futures prices are always a little higher in general. They don't vig it as hard. So that would be one to look into at least on your end. I don't know if Matt has anything to add there.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say the same two places as you. Bookmaker and Bet Online pretty much take the most and put the lines up the earliest. So those are probably the two best offshores right now anyway. As far as the other stuff, I know there are a lot of other books out there. I'm pretty sure you can go to, what is it, SBR and a few other websites, sure, grade all of these books. So I would definitely go through, look at what some of these grades and, you know, some of these reviews that they've had and, you know, what other people are saying.
Hey, thanks, Jim, for calling in. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
I'm not sure how much I trust the SBR grades.
Oh,
I
guess is it, are they not? I don't know. All right, well, take that back then.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not putting Matt on the spot because I don't know if it's one way or the other, but if it seems really easy in my head that some book could just pay SBR off to list them A+ or whatever, however their ratings.
Well, someone correct us on Twitter if we're wrong on that.
Yeah, there might be someone that gets the gist of that, and I would be curious to see how that works. I know. I guess a positive thing would be, I know that BetDSI got knocked pretty hard. I was a friend of mine, a connection I have, was owed like over 20,000, and they weren't paying him off for like months. And eventually he did get paid off because I blasted him on Twitter ultimately, and a couple other people took it to that, and then it got resolved magically within like 2 weeks after that. So they're grading though at SBR, and I think it's 4-0 now.
Wow.
Yeah, Boston up 4-0. So, by the way, I'm a Dodgers fan, and I actually prefer Boston. So
yeah,
I know most,
not to, right?
Most people probably don't, but I think that's the – I mean, the Astros are technically the better team. And plus, I mean, if I'm the MLB now, how do you not fix Game 6 and 7 in Milwaukee to make sure the Dodgers, Los Angeles, Boston? Like,
pretty,
that's got to
happen, big ratings
right
there,
so,
huh? Has there ever been a Red Sox-Dodgers World Series?
I'm not sure. Not in my lifetime, yeah. I'm sure. But, yeah, that's a good question. That's probably happened maybe when they were in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Unless they were in the same league. I'm not sure. Someone will yell at us probably. But – anyway, the BetDSI situation, SBR actually lowered their grade from whatever it was. It may have been an A down to like a C-. And I don't even know how that ever got resolved or if their grading's higher now and if it took some time or whatever. But they did actually make adjustments accordingly. So maybe it is a pretty good source. I'm just not sure either direction. Cool. No calls. We can jump into games. But I first wanted to just say real quick, I haven't graded. It takes a long time to manually grade the Moneyline Dog Contest we do. And I haven't had time this week to do it. But there was one person who called in, David, last week, and he won with Michigan State at plus 13.5, and the callers last week got a bonus 10 points. And so he actually got 23.5 last week for that. And he also, I think he banged like Texas Tech against someone they were getting 13 or 14.
Oh, really?
Was it
Oklahoma
State? Oklahoma
State, yeah.
Yep, so he is now in first place, I
Not
believe.
Not bad. Wow.
Ahead of the old Dom guy who had the upset over Virginia Tech originally for 28 points. So that's where that sits, but I need to kind of get – I just need to take some time. It takes a few hours to actually put it all together.
Have you hit one yet yourself?
No, but you know, I actually did. I used Minnesota just to try to get in it. And
yeah.
I actually had a shot there in the fourth quarter down three.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I was actually rooting for them pretty hard against Ohio State. Cool. Let's just jump. Did that.
Questions?
There was something about, oh, we were going to do bye week relevance, but we'll get to questions first. And if we have more time at the end and don't have any more calls, we'll do a bye week relevance just because Matt and I were actually arguing a little bit about it earlier this week, which I think is good. So first question came from MHS22. He says it's more of an NFL question. He has access to 6-point teasers at minus 110 and 7-pointers for minus 120. How often and when would you be betting these? Thank you. So I actually wrote an article 3 weeks ago. So I do a weekly column at ESPN. I'll tout that. And in one of them, I do like a bettor's toolbox or a handicapper's toolbox is like the subsection within the column. And one of them I did like teaser strategy, basic teaser strategy, because 1 week I had like three questions about 13.4 team teasers or something. And a couple, and there was one person, a friend that had texted me, messaged me about, I think he teased like a plus 3.5 to, or minus 3.5 to plus 2.5. Like he teased through the zero. So I was like, you know, is biggest sports betting is going to just slowly get an increase. It's probably worth like mentioning what I think is correct teaser usage. And ultimately, it's really just NFL. And when you can take a 6-pointer that's minus 110, like you mentioned, Michael, through the 3 and the 7. So if you're taking a favorite down from 7.5, 8, 8.5, or if you're taking the dog up to get, you know, 7.5, 8, 8.5. So those are the times to do it. Technically, you know, you could look up a Wong teaser theory, I think is the name of it. You can actually like look at the numbers. Blindly, they're correct and profitable. I don't just do them blindly, but if you wanted to take that approach, Like the Cardinals tonight wouldn't have been a good option, but technically it was the right way to go up to 7.5. Actually, they close picked too, so you would have had a little extra value versus the line close. One I bet this week, though, I bet maybe one every other two or three weeks, but I bet Cowboys up to 8 and Colts down to 1.5 for what it's worth. So they are profitable long term if you're doing them correctly, but I would not be teasing, you know, 4.5s to 10.5s very often or at all. You're better off usually just taking the plus 4.5 straight and that type of thing. So just make sure you're going through the 3 and 7. And it's worth noting, like, 4 and 6 are two really key numbers in the NFL, especially. So it's really like you're getting four numbers of value. 2 is, I think, the 6th most key number or 7th most key number in the NFL. So even getting, like, Colts, for example, a 7.5 down to minus 1.5, that gets another key number in there. So if you have more questions, just I'll reference the article or I'll retweet it, and then you can find it. You could probably just Google it, honestly, ESPN, and type in my name and teaser NFL, and it should pop up. We have another caller. Sorry, Ryan, I made you wait for about a minute there, but how you doing tonight?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. Thanks for having me on. You know, with the Lakers tipping off here in about 8 minutes, I just
dedication doing the show. Lakers, LeBron opening night, and I'm here. But I did bet the Blazers for what it's worth, -3. If anyone wants to bet that.
Okay. So what do you think the just getting trying to get your thoughts on the season wins total for Lakers? Do you think the number's right, or I know when it came out 47.5. At first glance, I thought it was a little bit low considering, you know, some mediocre teams, you know, 147, 146 last year in that conference. Just trying to get your thoughts. Thanks.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. The opener 47.5, it got up to 49.5 some places and it was bet back down. I think what you call it, the closing season win total is probably like around 48 or juiced 48.5 to the under. I'll be honest. I think people that didn't watch the Lakers for a few years because they weren't fans, and so why else would you watch the Lakers? Because most people hate the Lakers. The young guys in the Lakers are really good at basketball. Lonzo Ball, because he can't shoot very well and looks like he has a funny shot, is elite at everything else, and he was doing it as a rookie, you know, a 19-year-old, 20-year-old rookie. So, I mean, Kuzma's great scorer. Brandon Ingram's going to be really, really good. Josh Hart was a fantastic second-round pick. These are all guys that are, you know, 22, 21. I think Hart might be 22, but Ingram's right there, 22. Like, they're very good, and they were doing it all themselves without a guy like LeBron to facilitate or to just draw attention or a Rondo to facilitate. They never really have had a center. JaVale's going to be, you know, dunking all the time. So that being said, though, it's going to take some time. There's a lot of new parts, and there's a lot of young guys who haven't played with veterans, or at least veterans that weren't like Luol Deng and Timofey Mozgov. Like, it's a big thing. Like, that's going to be a big jump, and I think it's going to take time. I think they're going to be overvalued in the market in general early in the season, and I think they're going to be a really good team. Probably. I mean, if I was to guess, just, you know, it's obviously dependent after the All-Star break what the market number is in all of their games. But if you blindly bet them after the All-Star break against a spread, I would wager now that it's profitable. Just a guess. But, you know, we'll find out when it all is said and done. Maybe they're hot, like, in a month, right? Maybe it all happens sooner. But I think it will take some time, and then there'll be a streak where it's like, oh, okay, LeBron and the Lakers are figuring it out. So that's my assessment. I didn't bet the season win total at all. I think it's pretty fair. The West is really good. Like, the Jazz, I think, are probably the third best team in the West. OKC is going to be there, even though they're injured. Lakers are there. And then, like, teams like the Nuggets. And then if the T-Wolves and Jimmy Butler stays there, you know, who knows? The Spurs aren't going to just disappear. Pelicans are 45. And they crushed the Rockets by, what was it, 20-something last night on the road to open the season. So there's so many good teams. It's going to be hard, too, when you're trying to figure it out early in the season, I think, for a team to win 50 games, even with LeBron on it. So if I was to bet anything, I would have gone under. I did a podcast where I did have to take a season win total on the Lakers, and I did go under for the sake of the contest and the podcast. But I didn't actually wager any dollars on it. So that's where I'm at.
Fair enough. I think if they offered, you know, a midseason all-star break prop, that would probably be better if you were going to go over second half of the season over. I agree with you. I think it's going to take some time to get together.
Absolutely. Hey, we appreciate you calling, Ryan.
Take care.
I would say I could ask, like South Point might do it. I could ask Chris Andrews to put up like a post all-star break season win total or something like that.
Imagine if you knew someone who, you know, in the past has done midseason win totals.
Yeah,
on other sports.
Like, Chris did a Dodgers Astros. I know, you're just joking. I know. I was ignoring Matt. He did do an Astros Dodgers thing, but Matt also could probably do something like that.
Although you know, I'm not vouching for NBA mid-season win totals. So
plus it's like 30 what is it 32 games probably or something and 33 games. So if you really want to dive into that, let me know. But it'll be fun to watch. I'm a Lakers fan. That's where I grew up, so I'll be following all their games except the opening tip of this one. Next question, though. We'll jump into the questions unless we get another call. 702-364-1100 is the line. Better X, a regular contributor to the questions here and callers, he asked, what are your guys' thoughts on Michigan State? Keep up the good work. Thank you, sir. I'll let Matt take it since I just talked for 5 minutes about the Lakers and he almost fell asleep. So Michigan State.
Took a little nap there. No, I, as I've said, have a tough time with Michigan State, not a team I like getting involved with. And I've run my mouth so much this year that you really got to be careful betting against, I don't know. So, you know, I looked at the game. Michigan, obviously, they've kind of been a buzzsaw since that loss in the opener. Played pretty well against Wisconsin, you know, pretty much took control in the fourth quarter. I do want to note that they only led 13-7 at half, so you kind of got to be careful to overreact to them just blowing out Wisconsin over the final 30 minutes. But Michigan State, you know, coming off the Penn State win, they never led until that final touchdown. Got crushed in yards per play, so it's not like they really went out there and outplayed them necessarily. They just kind of hung around and found a way late, which is something that they've, you know, always been able to do over the years. I know it's tough laying 7 on the road against Sparty and, you know, in a rivalry game and with so much on the line, but I think Michigan's probably the only way I could play here. You know, first elite defense Michigan State's really faced. I don't know how they establish a run, so, yeah, I think it's probably Michigan or nothing.
I think, yeah. I wouldn't bet it at 7 now, but at 6.5 would have been the time to get it. For me, the one thing that I am a little bit surprised in, and it happened tonight, actually. I don't know the score. Last I checked, it was 3-3 with, like, 2 minutes in the first half. But ASU-Stanford got obliterated from, like, 51.5 to the mid-50s for the total.
57.5.
And then it got to 60 today. I posted. I said, I bet under 60 on Twitter. So hopefully people bet it. I think it's 3-3 at half. Or did someone score one
3-3,
more time?
Yeah, pretty ugly.
I usually lose these, so... If you want to buy out halftime and it's 6 overtimes. But anyway, so I'm not afraid to bet against moves. So I had quite a bit on 60 and 59.5, some of both. But this is another one. It's moved from 47.5 down to 40.5. I think that's too low. If I was going to bet anything in this game, I'd bet over 40.5. Now, I know there's some weather and stuff in the Midwest, particularly like the Iowa game's a big one. I will get into actually that game later answering one of these questions. So I'd have to follow it closely and it'd probably be like a before kick bet. Especially if it's under a 41, which is a super key number. And my number was 45, and I think when I looked at yours, it was 44-something. So, anyways, that's where I think there's value in the game if I was to bet it. Or if you snag the 6.5 on Michigan, I think that's the right side. Let me pull up the next question. I just switched tabs. It comes from Florida Eagle 777. He said, thoughts on Oregon plus 2.5 at Washington State as well as Colorado Washington. He also loves the podcast. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. You were just talking about Washington, Colorado. I know you were looking things up here right before we started. And Washington got steamed today, up from 15.5, 17.5 now in the market. I'm not touching the game personally, but it was an interesting move. I did bet against Colorado last week, which was easy until about the last 6 minutes, and Colorado scored twice and then got the onside kick, and I almost didn't cover -7. So that actually got a little sweaty. This one, yeah, total pass for me, but it's worth noting that Gaskin was upgraded to probable, which is probably the move today. And then I think you had a few other notes on it.
Yeah, you know, I kind of thought, I don't want to say Colorado got exposed. It's not like they got blown out, but I think we talked about the fact they hadn't really faced anyone yet. Their best win was at Nebraska, and USC pretty much handled them. They were up, what, 21-7, 28-7, something like that.
Yeah, it was a big lead.
Yeah, so, you know, looking at this game, this is now the best team, you know, even better than USC that Colorado's faced this year. Last two times they've played, got manhandled in the Pac-12 title game a couple years ago, and then last year, Washington blew them out on the road, or in Colorado's place. So I don't know. You know, I think one thing you have to be concerned about with Washington is, you know, they really haven't shown the ability to blow a lot of teams out. I think outside of BYU, they really haven't dominated that many teams, or, you know, good teams. And I think after that second straight loss, you know, or that second loss of the year, is motivation kind of lacking now for Washington? What are they really playing for at this point? You know, you've got a bunch of seniors that played in the playoff 2 years ago. Obviously, that was the goal this year. Now you're kind of out of the picture. And, you know, it's easy to say, yeah, they want to win the Pac-12. But, you know, do they really have that same hunger and drive now that they're, you know, they've lost two games? So I think it's kind of a tough game. You got all that. And then, you know, you got a few guys questionable on both sides. So I don't know. I think that one's probably a pass.
Someone I respect quite a bit, I do know, bet it. He bet it yesterday, though, when it was 15.5. He did lay it with Washington. But I think that's a completely different bet than laying 17 now, so I wouldn't recommend doing that. One thing to note, the Oregon final, they lost. They had a chip shot to win it in regulation. They end up losing by three. I think that was one of the weirder overtime beats. That
they missed a field goal at the end of regulation, or was
Washington
had
a 29-yarder.
Yeah, Washington had it.
Yeah, okay, that's what I meant. Yeah. Right, so Washington, I'm saying they had a chance to win. They outgained Oregon. It was like 6.6 yards per play to 3.3. Like, Oregon couldn't move the ball very well against them.
Yeah.
Washington was just gifting them stuff, wasn't completing drives. And then in overtime, they marched it down, and they had like a first and goal from the four. And if I recall, had to settle for a field goal because they ran like two fade routes or something like that that didn't work, obviously.
Yeah, always genius.
They kicked the field goal from short, and then something happened in the Oregon. Was there a penalty on third and long, and then Oregon ran it in after a timeout? I think that's what it was. But anyways, it was kind of an unlucky win. I think if they ran that back, I think Washington, you know, wins that game by at least three, you know, more often than not. So I think Washington is the right side if you're forced to bet it, but I stayed away. The other part of this question was the same, I guess, you know, correlated game here is Oregon at Washington State. Oregon plus 2.5. They're now three most spots last I looked like an hour ago. So Washington State took a little money. I actually was surprised because I had this closer to pick. I've been a little down versus where the market's been on Washington State all season, though. So it wasn't anything I was jumping to bet. But at 3 or 3.5, I double-checked. There's no injuries that I see for Oregon, at least, you know, for now. I would consider Oregon, but I'm probably not going to be betting it.
Yeah, I was, you know, there are a couple games a week where you look at the number, compare it to yours, and, you know, at first you think, okay, you know, the game's going to go my way eventually. We'll see the move come. And then sometimes it just never comes. And, it, you know, it's really a big red flag for me when, you know, I'm way off on a game and you just really never get that move. It tells me I'm missing something. And this is one of those games this week. I actually had Oregon, I want to say, 1 or 2 in this game. So for them to be getting a full 3 points, I was really surprised to see that move come. And, you know, acknowledging how bad of a spot this is for Oregon coming off that overtime win over their rivals, game they should have lost, obviously. And then, you know, Wazoo coming off a bye, hosting game day for the first time ever. There's a lot of things working in Washington State's favor from a situational standpoint. I'm not really crazy about them either. So I kind of want to take a wait-and-see approach. I'm not sure I'm buying in yet, but this is definitely a game that, you know, I see that number, and I think I'm probably missing something here.
Sean Hunter. Oh, shoot. Sorry. He had thoughts on Stanford ASU. That's where that thread originated yesterday. I said that I wouldn't bet plus 2.5. I'd probably bet plus 3, though, and that at the time it was like 55.5 or whatever, and I thought that was a fine total, and then I went to 60 today. So anyways, there's that. Professor Shine. One of the most famous guys on Twitter last week, he asked why Don Best hired Kelly over you and I for the Don Best one-day camp. He thought maybe there was a bathing suit competition.
Listen, I would have smoked her in any bathing suit competition, so I don't know. That was definitely
You're
wasn't
certain
it.
About that?
No, I think I've run my mouth too much.
I will say I'm not sure exactly who it was. It might be someone that is no longer with us, RIP. Someone had a concept about doing a tout, like, calendar, like a yearly, monthly tally, like, so a featured tout bathing suit calendar, one per month, which would be horrible
just
and
terrible.
So great at the same time. And I'm kind of like, I mean, I'll be in it if you guys really want to put it together. We'll set up the
Cheeto fund. He'll do it as long as he's the centerfold.
That's centerfold, all, yeah. That's automatic. So last question. This is a long one coming from at Betting Filter, I believe. I actually forgot to tag. This came a couple hours ago, pretty recently. Try to tag your handle, but I believe it was Betting Filter. He said about his question about the five dime situation, which we discussed, but he also had other questions. He said, I wanted to hear your thoughts on just how many points down you adjust your totals projection based on heavy wind and rain. He says, do you take weather into account then for sides as well? The weather might neutralize a team's strength on offense, force them to do something they aren't comfortable doing, or have to run into a strength in the defense. How do you quantify that? He used Michigan State as an example. That's why the total is probably way lower than I think it should be, and it's moved 7 points. The other game that I think is a great example, like I touched on earlier, is Maryland-Iowa, which opened 51 or 51.5 and is now down to 44.5. And then the actual side itself was 13.5, down to 9.5. And so you really dig into this, and you look at Iowa, who – the last two games against Minnesota and Indiana have scored over 40, I think 48 and 42 points. Their offense has opened up a lot. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the actual stats for they're more readily available in the NFL, but like first down run and pass percentage. And Iowa actually last season, dropped, for what it's worth, to 3.8 yards per carry from being like 4.8, 4.6, 4.5 range for a few seasons in a row. They couldn't run the ball as well, and they weren't very good, but they were also, you know, that's who Iowa is. They try to run game control. They run it into a pile, maybe go play action every once in a while. This year, they're going play action on first down a ton. It's one of the most effective plays to call in the NFL. They're doing it a ton. They're dropping points all over. They're going on fourth downs inside the opponent's tens over and over. They're not even kicking field goals.
Wow.
They're taking this new kind of analytical approach that's been really successful. But when there's 25, 24-mile-per-hour projected winds, how are you going to be throwing effectively on first down, setting up everything? And so it kind of kills what their offensive scheming has been the last 2 weeks, which is why this is a great question. Well, how do you quantify that? Well, so far the market quantifies it as 4 points, right? If they were supposed to be 13.5, which I think was a little high. I think my number was around 12.5, and Matt's, I don't remember either. Might have been a little lower, but it's come down, and it's come down with the total. Obviously, when totals come down, then the favorite, I think, is going to come down. If you know, the total was 10, Iowa can't be minus 13.5. That's the extreme example. When the total's 51, but now it's down to 44.5, then they're not going to be laying 13.5 in a game that's projected to score a lot more points or a lot less points. So for me, it's one that's really impossible to quantify. There's not really a sample that we can actually, you know, kind of take and use the data and the numbers to say, okay, in 25-mile-per-hour winds, these players for Iowa against these players for Maryland are going to play like this. Like, there's just not enough data to even come close to saying and being reliable, right? So you just have to kind of use your best judgment, take all the variables into your equation, and then ultimately make a decision. My decision is not betting the game. I'm staying away. If Iowa can't throw the ball and they're just a run into the pile team, I looked it up again. Like, they're pretty poor running the ball this year. I think it's 3.8 or 3.9 yards per carry, ranked like 86th. Maryland, they're tied for 12th in the country defending the run. Opponents are only gaining 3.1 yards per play, and they've played a couple pretty good teams that can run the ball fairly well. So Maryland's rush D is great. I mean, the headbutt there, I think, just sets up nicely for Maryland. So if you grabbed and scooped Maryland at 13.5, 13, 12.5, 12, I think that's ultimately where I would lean. It might be a good kind of like really high variance. The wind's going crazy. The run game's not working for Iowa. Why not take Maryland on the money line at a really high price? That might be a worthwhile play. I'll probably look at doing that if I do a money line round robin. But I don't know if you had any other thoughts about the game. I've just been thinking that one through because it's been a weird dynamic to see all the numbers dropping down.
Yeah, I actually did have it lower. I think we had it, or I had it like 10, 10 and a half. So okay. I opened it a little bit lower on Sunday. I was really surprised by this aggressive move, and I'm glad that this came up, actually, because this answered the question for me. This move is definitely based on the fact that Maryland, all they do is run the ball. They literally just can't throw the ball. I think they have, like, I want to say maybe 3 games this year where they've thrown for over 100 yards against Iowa, who's
too.
Now Iowa's pass happy now. It's crazy. They went from, like you said, so... definitely just one of those situations where if there's really crazy wind, I mean, this is huge in Maryland's favor in a game that, you know, is double digits. So I do think one other note I made on this game is Iowa traditionally under Ferentz laying a bunch of points, not quite as strong of a bet as getting points or, you know, a game that's, you know, under a possession. So a little bit tough to lay with Iowa, especially coming off 2 really dominant road wins. I'm sure they're probably feeling pretty good about themselves coming back home. So I don't, you know, I do think it's Maryland or nothing, but at 9, 9.5 now, I mean, you just can't bet it.
Actually, so I tried to bet against Iowa in the Minnesota game. I stayed off all the Indiana steam last week, luckily, but they crushed. And Minnesota then went into Ohio State and outgained them per play. It was like 9.2 to 7.9, something like that. Like Minnesota, I mean, Iowa just killed Minnesota on the road. It was interesting. So it's one of those for me to just pass, see how the weather dictates the game. Maybe something you can bet live or look at second half. I think that was it for questions. We had a couple games that we liked that we wanted to touch on. First one. We both like this side, but Wake Forest, Florida State, we can just talk that through. Give us your little rundown.
Yeah, you know, Wake 2 weeks ago obviously took quite a beating, 63-3. They lost to Clemson, and looks like they're coming off a bye. Florida State's coming off a bye, so however you want to, you know, we talked about maybe discussing the bye week angle in a few minutes, you know. But either way, that washes. I think you look at Wake, and obviously, you know, you've seen some of these losses. They got buried by Notre Dame, got buried against Clemson. You want to say, okay, this team's just not very good. But at the end of the day, when you look, and the team's 3 losses are Clemson, Notre Dame, and to a healthy Boston College by 7. I mean, you know, I don't know if this Wake Forest team's necessarily bad. They've just had to play some elite opponents so far who have kind of been able to expose the fact that they like to push the tempo and kind of wear themselves down against better competition.
Which hurts you if you're the inferior team.
Yeah, so, you know, and obviously Florida State, the more talented team in this situation, but I think you've got a huge coaching advantage, which is great when both teams are coming off a bye. And then looking at Florida State, this is, you know, kind of like I talked about with Washington, You got a team who was kind of starting to figure it out a little bit. They were getting past that bad start, starting to play a lot better, and then they totally gave that game away against Miami. I mean, that was – I think they were up 20 and found
27
a way
to 27-7,
right? Yeah, they found a way to lose that game. So now you've been sitting around at home for 2 weeks. Your season's already screwed anyway. I mean, you've already pretty much had a disappointing year. And then you're coming off a bad loss to your rival, and you've got Clemson on deck. So if they happen to be looking ahead to Clemson, Clemson's on deck against a really tough Wake Forest team. Well, I think, you know, I just really like what Clawson does. I mean, he finds ways to, you know, kind of go out there and take this team that's really not all that athletic or skilled, and they find a way to compete every week. So I think you got a lot of good things going for you with Wake Forest here.
Yeah, so no, I agree with a lot of those points. I think as mundane or elementary as it sounds, you also could just look and be like, wait, it's 2018, Florida State's laying double digits. Like, and just
right,
pat the other
very
side.
True, yeah.
Just why not? But about bye weeks, real quick. So for me, the discussion was ultimately how relevant they are, what they're actually worth, or if they're worth anything at all. I think Matt actually kind of answered his own question when he threw it at me earlier this week, just in that like little breakdown there. And for me, it's, you know, historically, if you go back and like test the data, whether it's home, away, you know, a bye week is worth X amount of points. It's a little over one. It's worth a little more in NFL. But I absolutely believe that it's very coach dependent. And that's what Matt had just pointed out, where there's going to be some coaches where an extra, you know, 5 to 7 days to prepare is meaningless, doesn't end up mattering. And there's going to be guys, whether it be, I think like Patterson, Gary Patterson is one of the best right off by ATS records over a huge sample now, like of over 20 games. Or extra rest, right? If it's a prep for a bowl game, we'll count that too. But there's going to be coaches that are, right, they have an advantage versus the other coach. And when you have an advantage over the other coach, that's just going to be kind of compounded the more time you have to prepare for the game. It makes logical sense. So maybe a bye week for a team like that's worth 2 or 3 points when there's going to be sometimes it's worth zero ultimately. So I think you just have to be kind of not necessarily tracking, you know, specifically coaches, what their ATS off bye records are, but just know who the good coaches are that actually are going to get the most out of their team with the extra preparation that you believe in. And I think you can't go wrong necessarily, at least accounting for the bye as worth something as opposed to nothing. But I will say this then. Matt's right when he brought it up earlier this week, to the extent that there isn't a reason that you should be playing, we'll say, Wake Forest because they're coming off of a bye. Now, in this case, it's a wash because they both are. But you shouldn't just be playing a team because they're coming off of a bye. Like, that shouldn't be your reason for actually wagering money. The reason should be you think the number should be 8 and you're getting 10.5. And then they're also coming off of a bye. It's a nice bonus. But you should never be like making a decision. It's usually just kind of a top tactic, right? Where you need something to kind of sell the player or speak about a play. And you can talk about how it's the bye week and they had extra prep for 5 to 7 days and how much that helps. Oh, there's like 30 seconds that you just talked about how you like the side. And it really could be meaningless. So it's worth, you know, bringing it in, but then like figuring out what you want to do with that information. But I think it is going to be relevant for some coaches and then not so for others. Any other thoughts that you wanted to?
I think we somehow or sometimes fall into this trap. We always, you know, that's always a nice little bullet point you can add to your argument. And I really do think it, you know, like you said, it's coach dependent and also situation dependent. You know, I do think, you know, maybe the game before your bye is relevant, how banged up you were before the bye is relevant. I think all those things. So I think it's kind of dangerous. You know, I've never gone through and actually credited, you know, X amount of points for a bye. I'd rather just make note of that and say that's kind of a side, you know, maybe a, you know, plus or minus for the team I'm looking at. But, you know, like you said, definitely don't want to get in the habit of just saying, well, this team's off of a bye, you know, and the other team's not. So they definitely have an edge. I think like one game that stood out to me this week where you could actually say that, North Carolina Syracuse, you could argue, you know, North Carolina coming off a really tough loss last week against Virginia Tech is facing a Syracuse team off a bye, and that number's gone against Syracuse, you know. So there are some situations where I think maybe the bye doesn't take, you know, it just really isn't the end-all be-all. So like Cheetah said, yeah, I think it's just a matter of, you know, being careful to not putting too much emphasis on that.
And one point I wanted to make is that even if there is that spot where you're like, oh, this team's off of a bye and the other team isn't, that's probably in 2018, that's probably already accounted for in the market. Anyway.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
Like, so why would you be really adding a bunch of points for that? Because, like, that's a spot that people have known about for years now. So it's not, I mean.
Yeah, you're not fooling anyone.
Yes, you're not fooling anyone. That's a perfect way to put it. Although I think Syracuse finally got bet back up to 10.5.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's creeping up.
Thankfully. I was going to look really bad. I did bet Syracuse, for what it's worth, people that are listening in. So, and UNC's down to the third quarterback. I mean, they're probably figuring out if the guy who got hurt against Vitek's going to be able to play. They got to decide. I will say this, that, and I didn't have action that mattered at this point in the game, but North Carolina with a minute left, minute something, they were up, was it 5 points? Yes, 5 points at the goal line. The running back running it in, somehow it popped out of his hands without getting hit. It just blooped up right before the goal line to a Vitek defender who actually stumbled. He would have taken it to the house, but he fell down. And then Vitek went in like a minute, went and scored and got the two. And North Carolina went from going up 12 to losing the game by three somehow because this ball just magically, mysteriously popped out of the guy's hand at the goal line without even getting tackled. He walked in after in the end zone and just like looked over and the ball was going the other way. It was the weirdest thing. So anyways, that's a pretty rough one to get by, I guess, if you're North Carolina. That would have been a nice win for the program with the third stringer in at quarterback after the second stringer gets injured and Surratt was announced injured for the year earlier that week. Kind of adds up. Anything else? Any other games you wanted to talk about? There's one more I wanted to throw at you.
Yeah.
I'm curious about your thoughts. It's not one I'm probably going to bet, and I haven't looked at updated weather situations. I don't think it's very serious, but Ohio State-Purdue. It's one where Ohio State now has played two games against really bad teams as like 30-point favorites and struggled. That was Indiana and Minnesota. Purdue's obviously pretty good. Well coached, Brom, he's at home. I was going to say one more thing. Oh yeah, Bosa is officially just going to wait for the NFL, so he's officially not playing, which has been pretty big and devastating to the Ohio State defense. And Purdue was 14 at one point earlier this week, and last I looked was 12.5, I think.
Yeah, they're definitely getting the sharp money.
Some 13s in Vegas if you're around in Las Vegas.
It's 12, some places.
But the total's gone up to 68.5. So I actually agree with the move on the total. My actual raw number is 14.5, but you can argue Bosa on the defense needs to be downgraded in general just based on what we've seen. The fact that Bosa's out, I mean, and the way they've looked the last few weeks. So overall, this is probably perfect now. But I'm just curious if you had any thoughts. And last thing, a money line shot. I think that's probably a good round robin option when it's all said and done, getting a decent price there with Purdue.
This Ohio State team, they're so underwhelming. I mean, every week they, you know, you think, all right, maybe this is the week they go out and really bury someone, and defense is not that good and they don't seem interested. I'm wondering if maybe going into a, you know, a tougher environment, tougher game, big atmosphere as opposed to playing Minnesota at home maybe wakes them up a little bit. And I think on the other side, you know, I know that, you know, Purdue's really well coached. This team's better than past Purdue teams. But this is probably the first really, really big home game under Brom. First really big night televised game. So I worry about some of these teams like Purdue.
That's your favorite new thing
they
just, we talk about.
They
it,
just, you know, we talk about it with like the little brother standpoint, you know, when they're hosting the big school and they
everyone
just shit
hypes
down
it up
leg.
And then they never,
you know,
they
like they're just,
it.
They're
yeah.
totally terrified. They're, you know, a little too amped up and they can't control their emotions. So if Purdue can settle in and get comfortable and not, you know, turn the ball over twice, make a bunch of mistakes early, they might have a shot. But I kind of want to see how they handle this atmosphere because, you know, like I said, I just don't think they've really been in any type of game like this since Brom's gotten there.
Nice.
So right we'll
on.
See.
Hey, yeah. Thanks for coming in on Thursday night, by the way. I know.
No problem.
Switch up the schedule. Thanks, Jared, for coming in again, by the way. Were you going to say something? No? Fake out?
No, I was just going to ask what team has depressed you the most this season? I was going to write it on the board. But
oh, man.
Maybe we'll get one last caller.
Depressed me.
You're talking just college football, a school that's depressed me the most.
You're just like, just fall off into the seat.